All right, everyone, welcome to tonight's special episode of Free For All. As I'm sure you've probably heard from now in various other venues, such as our good friend Mr. Sharp earlier today, the Swamp Creatures or the Swamp Cast, some other folks, some guy named Bob that I've never heard of, but he must be one of Mike's new Republican buddies somewhere along the way. I am very happy to, I guess, be in the critical last spot of the media day for Mike, I think. I will take that, Mike, as a slot of honor. Am I correct in assuming that?
I think that's right. We always save the best for last. Nobody wants to follow your show, John. And so we're going to do it right for what it'll truly be by the end of this day, a mic drop.
There you go. Perfect. I hope not literally. I don't want you fainting and
probably literally
on your way to the hospital or anything, Mike.
No, nothing so dramatic.
But let's let everyone know. Mike is here. He had his announcement today, which we'll get into in a second. But you know, Mike and I have been doing Liberty Lens, our show, as co-hosts, and I'd like to think, I do consider him a friend. I hope he feels the same way about me. So I'm actually glad that he's here. He's got his tie off, which even before the cameras start rolling, the man never has his tie off. He has his tie off right now. So I'm hoping, you know, and he did say, hey, John, whatever the viewers and the listeners want to talk about, have them ask some questions. I'm here to answer questions. So anyone out there, as long as you don't use any four-letter words, or if you do, I'll be happy to censor them, feel free to join us in the chat. So to do that, you're on X, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook. We'll see all the chats. Send them our way. And I don't know why, but my co-host, Hody, who is absent today, he just is screaming, oh, no. I don't know why.
He's referring to the drop, the mic drop.
Oh, the mic drop. I thought he was terrified by the lack of a tie around you, Mike.
No, he's a very supportive individual, so that's how I'm saying.
Fair enough. Way to do it. Well, Mike, let's start out at the beginning, as my ancient countryman Homer once said. You announced today that you are leaving the Libertarian Party to join the Republican Liberty Caucus. So let's start right at the outset. What is a Republican Liberty Caucus, and why would the 2024 LPVP decide that now is a good time to leave the Libertarian Party and join the Republican Liberty Caucus?
Now is the time, John. Now is the time when a battle is brewing inside of the Republican Party. And this is going to be the battle to determine which direction that party goes as Donald Trump is leaving. There will be, it's not like I'm a brain surgeon who figured out this for the first time and no one else sees this coming. When Donald Trump leaves, that's a big vacuum. That's a political vacuum as large as anyone has ever seen anywhere in any country, in any party, in any century, right? That's a big deal. And I think that it's particularly interesting, not just because it's so big, but there are a couple of other important characteristics that make it really important and an opportunity for libertarian-minded folks. One is that the Republican Party is dominant.
Right.
The Democratic Party is not even to the starting line in terms of figuring out what went wrong in the last election. And I mean that as affectionately as possible. I've got a lot of friends and family in the Democratic Party. I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, but there are a lot of Democratic Party politicians who feel that they were on the right track and had the right strategy in the last cycle. They just didn't do it well enough. That for on their part, for their sake, that's dangerously stupid.
Yeah, it's very naive. Very naive.
It's very naive. I also think that the independent route has been tried. I think Bobby Kennedy demonstrated that you can be charming and have the correct last name and have $1 billion, and that's still an uphill battle. And the Libertarian Party, while I do believe is going to get on a much better footing in the short run or in the next couple of years, in the long run, I think it's still going to face the same structural issues that it has for the past 50 years. And so the Republican Party is going to be where the important fights are. It's where the big fight's going to be when the president leaves. In fact, the battle is starting now in anticipation of him leaving. And this is the critical part that differentiates it from all other vacuums. I believe the schism that is going to form will be along libertarian lines. I do believe that the president is of two minds. And he's a complicated character. We all recognize that, right?
Right.
We were all hopeful last year that he would pursue his libertarian side. To even call it a libertarian side is a little bit optimistic, I think. But I think we all recognize there are things that he says that we cheer, right? He is naturally skeptical of government, of status quo, of big institutions, of waste, fraud, and abuse, and of spending too much money. He is skeptical of a government's ability to project power abroad and control what other people do. He's skeptical a lot of the things that we are skeptical of as libertarians. On the other hand, and you and I have talked about this 100 times, right. He gets crappy staff work. He gets crappy work from the rest of his administration that allows the administration to go off the rails when it comes to adherence to the Constitution, when it comes to not spending too much money, when it comes to appropriately negotiating with foreign governments.
Right.
He is not being helped by people in the administration. And so I think that this battle is going to be drawn along the lines of not so much what the ultimate objectives are. I think that there is largely agreement around the United States on many objectives. For example, the idea that there should be some control of the southern border and that Americans expect there to be some vetting. That's an extremely popular issue across the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and even a lot of libertarians, though we don't like to admit it. But the idea that you should be able to execute on deportations without reverence for the Constitution, without due process, that is not something that we should be tolerating. That's just an example of where that schism is going to be drawn. I think that a lot of us recognize that we need to be more fiscally conservative, but there are going to be people who are serious about that and people who are going to be very, very unserious.
So Mike, and for all of those folks out there that might be wondering, yeah, I kind of knew this was coming, right? I hope Mike's proud of me. I kept my big yap shut. I didn't let any of this leak out ahead of time, as I'm often wont to do. I have a tough time keeping it brief. Mike knows that as well. But here's the question. So you having said that, and it, you know, when you listen to it objectively, you say, yeah, you know, it kind of makes sense. The question I have for you is, how much of an uphill battle will it be on the GOP side? And what do I mean by that? There's Thomas Massey. There's Rand Paul. Maybe Chip Roy to some degree. Maybe Mike Lee to some degree. And these guys are people that as libertarians, as members of the Libertarian Party, we always said, hey, those guys, you know, they're right for the most part. And if they were in the LP, I think most libertarians wouldn't object to that, right? They wouldn't mind calling a Massey or a Rand Paul a member of the Libertarian Party to a large extent. So personally, I've never had an issue with a Republican like Amash when he was in the GOP, right? Like I never had any problem saying that guy's a libertarian. The question, though, going back to a lot of people's hero politically, Ron Paul, that's always been a debate, right? Do you try to pull the Republican Party more towards liberty from within or from without? Okay. And yep. How much do you think the cult of Trump personality, and let's face it, it's his cult of personality. It's not J.D. Vance. It's not Stephen Miller. It's not that guy who looks like Lurch running the immigration ICE raids, whatever his name is, Homan or whatever. It's not their personality that's driving this loyalty. It's specifically Trump's.
Yep.
When he hopefully decides to exit after his second term, do you see it really being wide open, or is the GOP, as a lot of people have suggested, really too far gone down the MAGA road to ever be sort of reeled in again? Yep. I mean, obviously you do, but I want to hear your thought process about it.
I think that there are a lot of things that are true at the same time. Trump does cast a long shadow. We have learned in the past that long political shadows are long geographically. They're long in terms of policy. They're very long in terms of personality. But they're not always that long chronologically. In American politics, there's a deep sense of what have you done for me lately? And gone is gone. There is a reason why we have the expression lame duck. Because if you can't do something for me, not just recently, but tomorrow, you're of very little use to me. And so I do believe that his influence will wane over time, not going to go away completely. And to your point, it is an uphill battle because of that. And there will be politicians who try to assume his mantle and say, I'm more Trumpian than you are.
Right.
But I do believe that that's going to be a lot of politicians, which opens a lane for a whole bunch of people who don't believe that that's a good idea. And so while it is true that we'll be in a minority, probably always in a minority, I think that that is a significant minority. It ain't anywhere near zero, and it is increasing and increasing rapidly. Not only because the White House continues to do things that offend libertarians, but because I think that once someone stands up and says, this is how we feel about certain issues, right? And, you know, good for the boss for saying some of the things that do need to be said, that's fine. But the way certain things are being executed, that just ain't right. And saying so out loud is going to give cover for a whole lot of Republicans who are waiting for someone else to say it. And say what you will about libertarians. You know, people have called you and me hard-headed.
Oh, sure.
And not just thick-skinned. There's a, you know, thick-skinned is good. Hard-headed can be better or worse.
Right.
But you know that as a libertarian, no one on my team, none of us are going to be waiting for someone else to be the first to say it.
Right.
We'll be the one saying it. And I think that once we get a voice out there, we'll get a ball rolling and people will warm to the idea that there is cover, that you can say it without losing your head. Now, the White House does threaten primaries from time to time if people don't fall into line, but to a certain extent, it's how you manage that, right? I don't have to worry about a primary. I don't have to worry about the White House coming after me. So, you know, maybe that's cheap talk for me to expect a GOP politician to join us. I need to appreciate that comes at an extra cost for certain people.
Right.
But having said that, you know, we don't personalize things. We don't criticize the president for being the president. We don't criticize him for his style, which, you know, recognizably ain't my style. But we don't criticize him for things like that. I criticize the administration because I think that the way that it goes about disrespecting the Constitution is dopey and not good for us. And that's a very different apple from which to bite.
It is. And Mike, I'm going to jump all over the place because I have so many questions jumping in my head. So you have to rein me in a little bit. You got to be like a real co-host like you are in Liberty Land. So let's move on. So here's a question. In some of your and like I said, I've been kind of following your interviews during the day because I think in each one, depending on who's hosting it, a little more comes out, you know, and I'd like to think that I'm collecting all of it. So one of the interesting things I've heard, which we had talked about previously, is you were approached earlier about joining the HHS, correct?
Right.
And what I found interesting, I mean, I had known about that, but what I found interesting was what you were asked by the Kennedy folks as sort of in your pre-interview interview. I don't know how you would describe it. Can you relate that story for us? Because I think it's going to be interesting in how it relates to this battle for the GOP soul that you were kind of referring to here.
Sure. And I don't think I'm violating anyone's confidence here. I think that it's widely recognized that this was an important question asked of interviewees. At what levels, I don't know, but I understand it was a widespread practice and a requirement. I was asked whether I could pledge loyalty to the president, and in a moment of lucidity that overcame Machiavellian judgment, I just blurted out no, and because I found it not just a question that had an obvious answer, but on some level a fairly insulting question to a libertarian, yes. Sure. To someone who is not in the Republican Party, absolutely. To someone who was on the ballot campaigning effectively against, not against him personally, but for a different set of policies.
Right.
And so I found it kind of an odd question. The person who asked me, I realized, you know, they were asking because they had to. It's not like they dreamt up this idea. I don't know whether that was an order that came from the president. I have no idea. Nor do I know whether that was the reason why they declined to invite me to join the administration, right?
Right.
It could be for 100 different reasons, 99 of which I'm sure because I just wasn't the right guy.
Sure.
So whatever reason. But it is something that leaves an impression upon you. Because it's not a question that should be asked.
You're right. It does smack of, I won't put words in your mouth anymore, but it does smack of something that I've always said, you know, that an administration that prizes loyalty over competency gets what it deserves, right? And so do the people, by the way. So my question to you, though, I'll ask you this. Tell me what you think of this. Do you think that loyalty is transferable? Let's assume in 2028, let's assume Vance follows the typical path of a VP for a president who's ending his has reached his term limit, and he becomes the GOP nominee. Do you feel that loyalty is transferable from Trump to Vance? Meaning that Vance may come along into the RLC, and obviously Mike Tremont is not the whole of the RLC, but for the fact that I have you in front of me right now, he comes to the RLC, he comes to Mike Tremont, and he says, hey, Mike, you got to pledge loyalty to me, JD, if you want your slate of candidates to get my thumbs up. If the RLC's candidates, as many or as few as they may be, want to get the official Vance thumbs up, you got to swear your fealty to me, just like we asked you to do to President Trump. Do you feel that's something that's going to happen? Do you feel that's something that these higher-ups in the current Trump administration feel they can leverage out of Republicans going forward?
That's a fascinating question. I hadn't thought it all the way through. There may be certain people who think that they can push that through. I would not be optimistic on their behalf that they would be successful. For starters, people like you keep asking me this story. And so by the time it actually came to pass, I think someone in the vice president's office would probably say, don't bother asking that idiot Mike Tremont the question. We already know the answer. So, you know, as a practical matter, that probably wouldn't happen. But I think that there's an important part of the story that is worth repeating. The important part of the story is not the part that pertains to me, right? Whether right. I got a job in the administration or not, sure. It's small potatoes to the world. The larger piece is, and you know, this is something that we've discussed in a little bit different context, but you have to admit that as a libertarian-minded individual, you would be much more comfortable with the gal or guy who answered negatively than you would be with a gal or guy who answered affirmatively.
I would hope so.
Yeah. In other words, I could imagine if you or I were running, you know, hiring personnel office for an administration, if we asked that question, we would screen out everyone that said yes.
You're probably right. Yeah.
We would yeah. I mean, that's disqualifying. Sure. It's got to be disqualifying.
Right.
You are asked, I've taken the oath, I think, four different times to the Constitution and various jobs along the way. I used to work for the White House. I worked for a couple of other agencies. I worked for the police department. Each time they ask you, you know, you've got to hold up your hand and you got to say things to the personnel manager and you got to sign a document. You got to pledge loyalty to the Constitution.
Right.
Well, you know, the old saying about serving two masters, you know, you're loyal to the Constitution or you're loyal to some guy. Now, even if you thought Donald Trump was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and a lot of people do, he's not the Constitution. There is a difference. And by the way, the irony is that he would tell you there's a difference. This is not a guy who says, you know, Anthony Fauci says, I'm science. Donald Trump does not say, I'm the Constitution. He knows there's a difference. And
I don't think whether the difference matters to him or not might be a question for debate.
That may be a different question.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. That you know, l'état c'est moi is not something that would come out of his mouth, even in broken French. But just very quickly there, Mike, let me just throw up a quick comment from Linda.
Don't repeat Mike, that Linda comment.
Mike, the GOP will always welcome good-looking men.
I think welcome that she aboard. Means that you've got to join the GOP with me. I think that's what
No.
That's
please,
where this
please,
is
please.
Going. Please lay down. By the way, Linda, I have not asked John yet. Notice I use the word yet. I have not asked John to come with me, but I will. I promise that I will in fulfillment of your implicit admonishment there.
There you go. Thank you, Mike, for that. But let's take a little 180 right now, and let's talk about the party you're leaving behind. And you know, when you and I were talking during our usual like prep sessions before filming an episode of Liberty Lens, I forget how long ago it was, maybe 2 months ago. And you kind of told me you were thinking about this move. My first reaction, which you probably saw on my face, was sort of like disappointment. Not that I would ever begrudge someone doing what they felt was best for them, you know, as long as they weren't hurting anybody. You know, so, you know, I was like, hey, Mike, congratulations. But here's the thing. There are people in the LP who will either view this as a betrayal or as the most fortuitous thing that ever could have happened to them, right? Because depending on where you are in the LP, right? So, I'm sorry, before I continue, my partner's always keeping me honest here. He says, the day Big John becomes a Republican, hell will freeze over, his wife will leave him, and New York will turn red. And that comes from Willem Del Pilar, one of my partner
here.
Yeah,
let's go for two out of three. Yeah. I'll recruit him and his wife together.
There we go.
We'll keep them together.
Yeah, Doreen and Nancy can hang out. Okay, so here's the thing, right? So, in the LP now, first of all, obvious question. How did your running mate from 2024, Chase Oliver, react when you told them your intentions?
Yep. Chase was very supportive on a personal level. You know, Chase and I have grown to be friends. I hope I'm allowed to say that. I haven't asked his permission to say that, but I think that that's an accurate characterization.
Okay.
He was personally very supportive, skeptical about the potential for success, which I find wholly reasonable. If he said this was a slam dunk, you would worry about his IQ. to his credit, wished me well. Peeling back, you said something very, very interesting, that you would not begrudge someone doing something that they thought was best for them. And I appreciate that. And I know that you mean that, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is best for me.
Interesting. Okay, go ahead. Tell me about that.
I don't know that this is best for me, for anyone on the team, but I think that this is worth a shot. I think that someone has to try.
Hmm.
And I don't think that there's anyone as well positioned as me, as I am, to try this. In other words, you and I have talked about how important this is.
Right.
I believe that if we don't change the trajectory of the Republican Party, we will fail to change the trajectory of American politics, and that means facing the existential crises that are facing the federal government with virtually no roadblocks. We're on our path to death and destruction. And I don't mean that to sound overly melodramatic, but there are a lot of problems around the corner that are very important. We can talk about those, but put a pin in that just for a moment, right?
Right.
This is important. I believe that means not only that it's all hands on deck, and it does mean that. It does mean all hands on deck. Every libertarian, every liberty-minded Democrat, both right. of them, and every liberty-minded Republican have got to do everything that they can to move the American government in a more constitutional direction.
Right.
It also means that we need to try everything we can. Someone needs to try this. I don't know whether it's a 1% or a 99% chance of success, but I know it's not zero. Someone needs to try this. I don't know if it's 10 times better than staying in the Libertarian Party or 1/10 as good as staying in the Libertarian Party. But someone needs to try this. Someone needs to try affecting the Republican Party and doing so inside of the RLC with a very supportive RLC. And an RLC I'm proud to support.
Right.
Someone needs to try this.
Right.
I'm convinced of that. That I view as objectively true and correct. Right. Now, if you buy that, that someone needs to try that, who? You're going to ask Chase to do it? Chase ain't having a part of it. Right. Chase, you know, is a guy who should be at least considering the Democratic Party. And if you believe, as I do, that it's going to be 390 years until the Democratic Party develops a libertarian wing, I'm not sure I would advise that.
Right.
Who else? You're going to ask, I don't know, who else would you ask to try this?
No, I understand what you're saying. And in some ways, not in some ways, I do understand what you're saying. But there's a comment that kind of speaks to what you're saying. I won't put it on the screen because, against my admonishment, it included a four-letter word. So I'm going to read it off, give credit to the person. But, hey, viewers out there, just to tell you that Mike was honest about saying he'll answer any question, I'm going to read your question. So this comes from someone named Nice Dream on YouTube. He says, Mike sees a fascist Republican Party unleashing the military and ICE Gestapo agents on the streets and says, hey, I want to join that team. Go F yourself, Mike. So, like, again, Nice Dream. Thanks for your comment.
Let me jump in. Don't waste your air. Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
I see a regime going in a bad direction, agreeing with your characterization, which right. might be a little bit over the top, but I understand your point.
Yeah.
You see it. I see it.
Right.
And one of the two of us is willing to do whatever it takes to stop it. And that ain't you.
Right. Right. See,
just
I think
keeping it real. Just keeping it real. One right. of us is a lazy sack typing.
Right.
And one of us is putting his entire career
right.
at stake for the good of others.
Right.
That ain't you.
Right.
So don't kid a kidder. Be careful who you accuse. Of
right.
doing the right thing.
Right.
I'm not saying you're an unethical person. I'm saying you're both intellectually lazy and politically lazy.
So, and I mean, I and listen, Mike, you have to admit, some people are going to have that reaction to this announcement that you've made, right? And to the extent that I think maybe this person joined a little late, you're not joining and also, let's be honest, you make a move like this, you're not coming back to the Libertarian Party, right? Because you may have burned a lot of bridges right now. I don't know for sure. But certainly that can't be part of your equation right now. Your equation can't be, I'm giving this a try with the RLC for a year. Then if it doesn't work out, I'm coming back, right?
No, like, this has to be a very, very long-term commitment. No one is suggesting that success looks like, you know, 36 months from now, we're,
right.
you know, kingmakers. That's right. not what this looks like. This is a 3-7-11 year project.
Right. And listen, for those out there, for whatever my assessment is worth to you, I believe Mike when he says, like, hey, I see a problem and I'm trying a – and look, like you said, it could be a Hail Mary pass, right? But at least you got to try the Hail Mary if you think there's a chance you can win the game. Hody, who I gave the night off to because I think he had book club, he goes, didn't Austin Peterson do this? Which is something you read a lot about on Twitter when you made this announcement. How do you compare what you're doing to what Austin Peterson did when he left the Libertarian Party? I think he ran for president, tried to get be the presidential nominee. What year was it? 2020, I think. Could be wrong about the year. Or 2016, rather. 2016, 2020. And then ran for Senate as a Republican in Missouri, right? So how do you compare what you're doing to what Peterson did to Hody's question?
I'm no expert on what Austin did. And I like Austin a lot. I'm a bit of an Austin Peterson fan. I think he's a very interesting guy, a very smart guy, and a very libertarian guy. So, you know, in fairness, I'm probably not the right guy to offer a lot of criticism of Austin Peterson. I'm not going to run for Senate in Missouri. I'll tell you that right now. or of anywhere else, by the way. You know, I got a terrifically popular congressman here in District 1 in Virginia who is not going anywhere. If, you know, he decides that he's going to hang it up at some point, you know, we're having a conversation, but I have not been told that that's anytime soon. He could be in office for 20 more years. So that's, you know, that's not what this is about. This is about building up the Republican Liberty Caucus, bringing our team over to help that, right? And let's remember, the Republican Liberty Caucus has a lot of terrific members now and a terrific board, a terrific chairman. They've been wonderful to us, very, very welcoming, very liberty-minded people, obviously very competent, very articulate, very willing to speak their mind, as all liberty-minded individuals are, no matter what party that they're in. And so our job is to support them, to recruit, build up the RLC. We're going to spend a year doing that, at least, doing nothing but that, trying to build it up so that we have the people resources, if not the financial resources, to try to play a role in a certain number, I don't know what number, but a certain number of races, whether they're local or congressional, I don't know exactly, but we will be looking for opportunities in the 26th cycle. I believe that we can make a difference, and knowing that we can make a difference is what is going to help us recruit for that purpose. Now, if you tell me that all of that is what Austin was trying to do, then I say, okay, maybe there's a strong analogy. But even if that were the case, and I don't think it is, I think he was following a little bit different path and strategy. Even if that were the case, this is a very different time.
Right.
As a matter of fact, look, I'm talking to Austin tomorrow morning, so I will bring it up. I will tell him that he has a lot of fans here who all say hello. But I'll ask him if he would like to join the Republican Liberty Caucus also.
Right.
You know, this isn't about any one particular individual, and none of this presupposes that one or even 10 people can make a difference. But can 100? Can 1,000 make a difference? Well, the answer is yes.
Right.
And given that, I believe that it's up to us to try.
And here's something that I just thought of as you were talking, right? So, I mean, obviously there's the Freedom Caucus as well. The RLC, the Freedom Caucus. You guys, and by guys, I'm being very colloquial with you, do the folks involved in that, do they think that a path within the Republican Party is to sort of go down this path of whatever Austin Peterson himself calls libertarian nationalism? And you and I once joked back when you were in the Libertarian Party, Mike.
No joke. I know what you're going to say, and it's no joke. I'll back you up.
Yeah. We did opine that the phrase libertarian nationalism is oxymoronic. However, you see a lot of people like Austin Peterson who think they have – They say look beyond the superficial oxymoronic nature of that phrase. We've got something here. Libertarian nationalism. Vivek Ramaswamy claims to be a libertarian nationalist. Again, whatever that means. So to the extent that that is in the ether somewhere in the Republican Party, certain corners of the Republican Party, is that something you have to deal with, build on, dispel? Talk to me about that.
I think it is something you have to deal with, absolutely. Personally, I think that Vivek Ramaswamy calls himself that because he thinks that he'll ingratiate himself to Trumpians while still asserting, maybe accurately, to be of a libertarian mind. I think he's trying to do a lot of straddling. I don't think he's really bumped into something that is, an intellectual ball buster, and good for him for coming up with it. I think that he's trying to put one foot on one side and one foot on the other side of a demarcation that could become important.
Right.
I think a lot of people don't appreciate any universal definition of nationalism, and so it's a very difficult thing to debate. You know, people can say, well, I'm a nationalist. It's the same thing as being a patriot. And others will say, you know, you're a nationalist. That makes you a racist. I appreciate why neither one of those is completely wrong, but each of those is pretty far away from being true also. Nationalism asserts a different set of principles than libertarianism. It is a philosophical approach to policy. And you can't fully embrace either. Now, can you be a robust patriot who doesn't give a damn about the rest of the world, only cares about America, and is still a libertarian? Probably. I'm gonna try to give that to you. Let's say that's a yes. I have a hard time with that personally, but let's say that that's a yes, that it's just patriotism on steroids, right? If that were the case, we shouldn't call it nationalism, first of all. But it also calls into question your definition of what is Americanism. Because I would argue that Americanism is definitionally a libertarian approach to individual rights that comes before the government. The government does not deter. All libertarians know this. I'm not saying anything that everyone isn't, you know, right, fully on board with and understands what I'm about to say before my lips move. Everyone understands that rights come before the government, and the government does not give you your rights. The government is only there to protect your rights. And that's the only reason the government exists.
Right.
That attitude is fundamentally incompatible with a true understanding of nationalism, because nationalism says there is a group of people that get advantaged. If whatever group that is,
right?
Whatever group that is, if there is such a group that's going to be advantaged, that necessarily presupposes someone who decides who is in and who is out. And that is what it is that is incompatible with a real fundamental principled form of libertarianism.
Right, right. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I just boil it down to one sentence. Nationalism puts the state before the individual. Libertarianism puts the individual before the state. And we could take the various flavors of each one. My man Hody has something to say as well now. He says, as somebody who roots for your tactic, I look at the members of the RLC. I see a lot of Trumpers, a lot of anti-immigrant stuff, a lot of anti-LGBTQ+ hatred, anti-LGBTQ, because anti-LGBTQ hatred, Hody, would actually be support for LGBTQ, but I get what you mean.
I get what he means.
What's your plan to libertyize them?
The plan is to get our message out in front, loud and hard, and make it cool to be libertarian. It's no longer cool to be unlibertarian. We have to make it cool. You can be a fan of the – I'm okay. You can be a Donald Trump fan. You can be a Trumper. You can call yourself MAGA. You can call yourself America First. You can call yourself whatever you want. But no longer can we say or even tolerate it being uncool to be libertarian. Because libertarianism is Americanism. And we need to own that. We need to own the fact that our philosophy is the descendant of the American Revolution.
Sure.
Of the Constitution. That we are the philosophical descendants of the individuals who put those documents together. And it is our philosophy on which the nation was founded, on which the government was founded, and to no small extent, the nation, the country, even right. before the government. It is that attitude. We need to own that. And we need to be comfortable rubbing other people's noses in it. Sure. Because it's the truth. And because so much is at stake. Now, you can have whatever other feelings that you want. That's fine, right? But we cannot allow that to be just run rampant, the only cool thing, right?
Right, right.
Libertarians don't get bullied. We don't allow ourselves to get bullied.
Right.
And sometimes you just need more libertarians around to make sure that we don't allow ourselves to be shouted down. That's not a thing that we're going to allow to have happen anymore.
Yeah. So one of the things, and by the way, for folks out there, Mike is answering questions. You saw him get a little worked up before at one of your questions. If you want to see him get worked up again, feel free to hit us up in the chat, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X. Again, if you want me to put up your comment, just avoid the four-letter words. That's all I ask. It's the only rule we have around here. But any subject is available to you. So, Mike, I personally want to say something, right? Because I see a lot of people who'll say, hey, Big John, on occasion, you've gotten out here on Free For All, whether it's been with Hody or Mike or Chase or somebody else, and you've said, look, what Angela McArdle did was wrong, inviting Trump and RFK to your nominating convention. I've railed against it. Why are you treating Mike with such respect and reverence? Isn't he doing the same thing? And from my perspective, I know what the distinction is. The distinction is Mike is pursuing a tactic. The tactic is not stay in the Libertarian Party and act like a Republican or sell out Libertarian access to the Republican Party. Mike is saying, I think this is an opportunity to take a fractured and perhaps heading in the wrong direction Republican Party and try to steer it back towards liberty, which is a large difference from what a lot of us think happened under the previous chair, which was just sell out the party's access to whoever she felt would be able to deliver on some sort of promise. And to the extent that for 2026, she has said, well, she runs for chair, we'll see whether she does or not based on the motions. But that her goal is to run a LP candidate who can get 10% of the vote and then turn around and give it to the Republican nominee in exchange for a cabinet position. She's been public about this, and that was the plan with Dave Smith. There's a difference between that. One is selling out the Libertarian Party. One is leaving the Libertarian Party to pursue a different strategy. Mike, talk to me. Should libertarians, in your opinion, now that you're not in the Libertarian Party, you're not bound by any ethical code or anything like that, other than your own, of course, what do you think of this strategy? What about the folks who are still in the Libertarian Party who say, hey, McArdle, Heiss, these guys have it right. They want to use the Libertarian Party as the Republican minor leagues to literally just whoever gets 10%, just turn that over to J.D. Vance in 2026.
Turns my stomach. What we're doing is the opposite. 180 degrees the opposite. Mm. Instead of staying inside the Libertarian Party, we're leaving. We're not bringing Republicans into the Libertarian Party to try to change the Libertarian Party.
Right.
180 degrees opposite.
Right.
I'm not saying merely that it doesn't rhyme like it. I'm saying not only is it a different song, I'm saying one's music and one's gardening. I mean, these are two different activities. But as long as you brought it up.
I knew I would, but okay.
the Libertarian Party needs to take its own brand very seriously.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's my feeling that the Libertarian Party ought to pack up the tent and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least take the word party off of it and call it the Libertarian Dinner Club.
Right.
If you want to be a social club and merely a social club, and I recognize that every political party has a
okay, looks like Mike may have gotten a bit frozen there. Let's see if we could unfreeze him here a bit. And let's see if we could get him back. Oh, he dropped off. So I will try to fill some dead air until Mike can join us again. And we were talking about, oh, here he is. He's back. Let me just get him. I didn't have to do too much filling of dead air, Mike. You're back.
You know, it's funny. When we lose a connection, I always think that it's you that gets bumped out, and you must perceive that it's me who gets bumped
out.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Look, I explained how to solve all of the world's problems. If you didn't get it, then that's too bad. No, look, the Libertarian Party has to take its brand very seriously as a party and has to fulfill that role. If you don't want to do that and you just want to be a social club, that's fine. There's value in social clubs, but you've got to make up your mind one or the other.
Right.
If you're going to be a political party, you cannot be successful in the long run without taking your brand very seriously. If you decide that, and I don't know that anyone has said this, but I think you probably exaggerated a little bit, but what do I know what other people are thinking, right?
Right.
But the idea of being someone else's minor league means that you no longer have a brand.
Correct. I agree.
If you're going to forfeit your brand, you are trading your brand in the short run for a short run gain so that in the long run, you've given up your brand. You've ceded control over your brand. It's like pegging your currency to someone else's currency. You no longer have control over your own monetary policy. A minor league baseball team has no control over its personnel. It adopts the brand of a major league team. The major league team controls who goes on the field. All you do is sell popcorn. That's how minor league baseball works in the United States. That's fine. If that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. But do not pretend, because as someone who spent a lot of time working with nonprofits in a lot of places and with a lot of political parties and organizations, I can tell you, do not pretend that it is a long-term strategy to undermine your own brand.
Yeah.
Your brand is all you have. A political party that does not take seriously its own brand is the same thing as a restaurant that doesn't take seriously food.
Right.
That's, you know, that's what you do, is you build your brand. If you don't have a useful brand as a political party, you just got a bunch of people.
Right.
You might as well be independent, right? That's the only thing that holds them together. So, yeah, you can play that game once, maybe twice, two political cycles, and then you're done.
Right.
Because no one is going to come into your party to differentiate themselves from the other parties if you're just a minor league.
You're right. And actually, the analogy as you were talking that pops into my head is for all those of us old enough to remember the old Bugs Bunny cartoons, there was once a talent show where Bugs was going up against Daffy Duck. And no matter what Daffy Duck did, the crowd preferred Bugs. And at the end, he does this fancy trick where he swallows a gallon of gasoline, swallows a match, blows himself up, and the crowd is cheering, and Bugs is cheering. He goes, "You finally did it, Daffy. You beat me. They want more." And he goes, yeah. And then you see his spirit rising to the heavens in Looney Tune form saying, "But it's a trick I can only do once."
It is a trick you can only do once. So pay close attention while I blow myself up.
Exactly. And I think that's the difference. If I run into these libertarians who are enamored of this strategy, the kingmaker strategy, one, it's not a kingmaker strategy if you only deal with one other political party. If you really wanted to pursue this path, you'd be pursuing like selling out to the Democrats,
Bingo.
To the Republicans, to everybody. Selling out to
means you got to auction.
You got to have an auction.
If you've already contracted for free,
right.
You can't extract the value that you want to extract.
Yeah.
But having said that, the reason that we ought to have a problem with this strategy, again, I don't know who has articulated what, so I'm not criticizing any individual.
Sure.
What do I know? You know, people do what you're going to do. I haven't been informed. I haven't had a conversation. I haven't read the memo.
Right.
But the reason this whole thing should give pause, in addition to what we just discussed, which is a short-term strategy to trade away your brand and thereby all of the value in your party, because that is the only value you have. The stumbling block on an ethical basis is that the brand, the value of the party, to the extent to which the party has any equity value whatsoever, is the result of a lot of hard work of hundreds of people, arguably thousands of people, over years, arguably over decades, who have done so with the idea of it being a long-term investment. The people who invested their sweat into this party in the 70s were doing it for the 80s. And the people who did it in the 80s were doing it for people in the 90s and in the next century.
Right.
All that we have built up has been the result of hard work by a lot of people over a lot of time. And if you're in the leadership of the party and find yourself facing a decision about whether to trade away the brand in order to achieve some short-term gain, I understand it. But remember, what you trade away is not yours. It is something that has been built up with the intention of it yielding value to the Libertarian Party, all of its members, and to the philosophy for years to come.
Yeah.
Okay. It is not a big negotiating achievement to trade away someone else's value.
Right.
That's just theft.
It is.
Now,
yes.
One more thing, and I mention this frequently, so apologies, but I think it should be mentioned one more time. I think Spike Cohen should run for president. I think he should run for president. I think he should represent the Libertarian Party and represent the Libertarian Party hard. A part of the reason you run to represent the Libertarian Party is to represent the philosophy. Absolutely.
Right.
It is to engage the issues of the day and to represent that philosophy as it applies to the issues that are determined by a lot of people outside of the party. Right? What the issues are is a matter of what the Republican people and the Democratic people and all of the other people decide that it is. We don't have control over that. And the third thing that a person has to do when representing the Libertarian Party is to represent the Libertarian Party.
Right.
Per se. You have to be the brand ambassador. And by the way, for all of you Chase haters out there, the guy who does a good talk on this subject is Chase Oliver. He understands whatever you may say about Chase's style. You have to admit that he gets this, that you are a brand ambassador for the party, and it is your obligation to build up value in the party while you're out there going from place to place to place. It's not about you. It's not about any of us as individuals or even as a group. It's about building up the value of the brand for the future to represent the philosophy, not to be traded away in a short-term bargain.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And, you know, and that's part of the reason why I felt conflicted, as I said at the top of the show, when you said, hey, I'm leaving to pursue this strategy. Not because I wish you ill or didn't. It's just, I think you get it. I think you were always a great candidate. Going back 2-3 years ago when I first interviewed you on my bio show, The Big Questions, and I could tell, you know, when we were talking that, you know, you had a passion for this and understood this. While I'm talking, Hody jumps in one more time and he says, good luck, Mike. I tried to change the GOP as well, and I did not win. I hope we'll earn you back from the GOP soon, or that your strategy works out. And knowing Hody as I do, he's sincere about that.
Sure he believes that. Remember that I'm always rooting for the Libertarian Party. You don't have to be a part of the party. And I'm a lifetime member, because they're not giving you your cash back, right? I'm a lifetime member and am proud and happy to be so, and will always root for the Libertarian Party in hopes that it does play the role that we all hope it will play.
Right.
Right? America should have a strong third party. I believe America should have a very strong fourth and fifth and sixth parties as well.
Right.
But, you know, let's build up the third party first. And that's part of the reason why I would like to see a very strong candidate. I don't mean that Spike is the only one. I happen to be a bit of a Spike fan. But we have other very strong individuals. I didn't want to say it on Larry's show earlier because, you know, I hate to be caught in front of Larry telling the world how much I like Larry. You know, that's not a good look.
Right.
But if he were to run, I think the party should, could, and would rally around a campaign for Larry. One of the problems in the Libertarian Party, of course, the caucus wars, makes all of that slightly random.
Mm.
I think it's very hard to know at the onset, well, impossible to know at the onset, what the result for any campaign would be. And I think that that's very discouraging for some good candidates to campaign for the nomination. You don't know how that's going to go, no matter what effort, money, time, energy, or how good a candidate you are. It is random, and it might not go your way. And I think for a lot of folks, that's rationally discouraging.
It is. And to your point, just in general, it's very hard to raise money in the Libertarian Party. It's very hard when the system is rigged to steal from or from Lars Mapstead. It's very hard when the system's rigged against you. Now, I know, you know, some of my Republican friends, some of my Democrat friends are stop whining, you know. But the truth of the matter is when state legislatures randomly change ballot access requirements, for example, here in my home state of New York is a classic case. It's happening. So, they try to pull it off in New Jersey, I think, Illinois as well. You know, as soon as they get any sense of somebody might be nipping at their heels, Mike, they just change the bar, right? They just when you think you have the answer, they change the questions, right?
New York and Illinois.
Yeah, there you go. By the way, Mets and Cubbies, first place in each division. I know you're still a diehard Cubs fan, right?
Never die. Not never die, die hard. Never die.
There you go. So, but sort of to wrap this up a little bit. So let me ask you this, though. In terms of what you've seen in the last couple of months from LP National, I'm not going to have you go through each state affiliate, obviously. Your friend, Stephen Nikala, how do you feel he's handling his new role? Any predictions about him? Anything, any opinions at all about Stephen and the job he's been doing?
First, on a personal level, I think that he is potentially the right guy. I think that he's smart, well-meaning. I think he understands a lot of these issues. I think he understands at a really fundamental level. I know this from conversation with him. I'm not just guessing. He understands at a really fundamental level the challenge in front of the party. He understands the importance of the brand. He understands how difficult it is given the duopolistic system that we're in, the nature of recruiting both people and money into the party. He gets it. He does get it. Are there things that, you know, I would have done differently? Yeah, absolutely. But he has the support of a lot of people who also understand what the challenges are. As a team, I believe that they are, that they absolutely can help the party go in the right direction. I don't know for how long Stephen is going to have an interest, right? I don't know whether he's going to stand for re-election as, you know, chair again or not. I don't even know how I would advise him. I mean, we'll all see about that, right? He could be the right guy in the long run, but I think that that is largely up to him and how he leans into certain issues and how he develops his own comfort level and style when it comes to certain things. I would advise him and anyone else who's going to get in that role to a couple of things. One is to take the brand very seriously. It is the heart and soul. It is all of the value of the party. There is no such thing as value in the party that does not revolve around the brand. That just is what it is, and I'm lying to you if I tell you otherwise. The second thing I would say is that the caucus wars can tear the party apart. Sure. No question about it. From time to time, I can be a big fan of caucuses. I'm not like a lot of other folks that say, and therefore we shouldn't have caucuses. That's not what I mean. Caucuses can play a very, very useful role. But if the reason you're developing a caucus is to exclude others from power, that is definitionally the behavior of a monopolist, which is counter to productivity, competition, politic behavior, and in the long run will be problematic. Whereas if your strategy is to push your positions and your philosophy as hard as absolutely possible, then I say go for it.
Okay.
That's a big difference, however. And then the third piece of advice, I don't know that I have a lot of advice, but it's a matter of recognizing what the problem is. And that is that we attract into the Libertarian Party a lot of people who care about a lot of things other than success. If you define success as playing a role in American politics, which is what I believe should be the objective, you have a lot of people inside the party who would not agree with that statement.
Interesting.
To me, that means they don't agree with the long-term success of the party. Now, again, that's fine. If you want the party to not be a political party, if you want it to be a dinner club, or if you just want it to be a way of venting.
Right.
Good for you. But that's not what political parties are here to do.
And that's a distinction, Mike, from a party that at the end of the day knows it may not get many electoral victories, which I would even challenge that when it comes to the Libertarian Party. We may not have success on the national level, but certainly on the local level, at least up until recently, the party was winning a lot of local elections. But there is something to the fact that if you run a party, if you run principal campaigns, a lot of libertarian ideals have made their way to the mainstream. Hody, whenever we do free-for-all, loves pointing this out. It's the libertarians who stuck to their principles that have seen the effects of their principled stands 20, 30 years ago, whether it's gay marriage, drug legalization to some extent, up until recently, support for free trade, support for less restrictive immigration. So to that extent, if you're as old as we are, Mike,
you've seen progress.
If you've got enough snow on the roof, you've seen the progress. Now, I understand youth. I understand the young guys who are in their 20s, the young gals who are in their 20s who say, hey, I don't feel like waiting until I'm 60 or 63 in the case of Big John and Mike Termont. I don't want to wait that long until I'm ready for retirement. I want to see some results now, today, tomorrow at the latest. So I get it, but take it from two old geezers that change has occurred, Mike. Would you agree? Like that politically speaking, the country on specific issues at least has been pulled towards the liberty side, the liberty perspective.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think that a part of that is due to a lot of hard work on the part of well-meaning and success-oriented people inside of the party. No question about it. And a piece of that is just sort of definitionally, the government does a lot of stupid things, and so when it stops doing them, you know, we need to take credit for that. But in fairness, to your point, the party has had some success playing a role in moving the philosophical center of gravity, whether you call that the Overton window or just allowing people to wake up to the ideas. I always say that they have a libertarian streak. They just need someone to help them articulate it and allow them to say it out loud without getting laughed at by too many of their friends. However, I don't think that we have the amount of time left before the federal government really faces an existential problem for the Libertarian Party to continue affecting the world at approximately the pace at which it has the past 50 years. We need more urgent change than that.
And listen, one of the things I think you're alluding to, and I'll say it out loud, you tell me if it's right or not, is one of the things is this bending or scraping up against the guardrails. And we've talked about this in the past. Two things that are of concern to me. Immigration policy, what it is, you can have your debates on that. Sending federal troops in against the governor's wishes to execute law enforcement activity, in essence, is a big red flag, a huge red flag to me. And the second thing is the attack on the judiciary, that because the judiciary is ruling against your policies, therefore the judiciary must be put down. They are traitors. They are whatever, activist judges, whatever the term is. These two things, Mike, and I know you, I tend to be overdramatic, these are the first steps of authoritarianism before our eyes. People who wonder, how could a nation fall into fascism, totalitarianism, Marxism, and all that, whatever ism you want to use. To me, those are the first steps. History has shown that to us, right?
Rhetoric comes first, and I think the judiciary issue is a combination of a little bit of stupid rhetoric and a little bit of silliness in terms of trying to exclude law firms, for example, from doing business with the federal government. I think that that's a ball of silliness that the president needs to be protected from. Someone needs to stand up and say, boss, I know you're pissed. You think a lot of people have misbehaved. I think a lot of us may agree that there has been bad misbehavior, by the way.
Right.
I think it is true that the justice system was weaponized against Donald Trump over the past several years. I think a lot of that is true. You had locally elected prosecutors say, I'm going to go after Donald Trump explicitly without talking about what the charges were. So it's not like he invented this idea. But none of that makes it okay to continue that. As a matter of fact, it creates an opportunity for someone to stand in front of that train and do the right thing. I also think that it's not just rhetorical in every case. I agree with you. Sending troops out to Los Angeles was at least dopey. I've got a bigger problem with what I think some people consider a smaller issue. We're all upset about the lack of due process for a lot of the deportations.
Right.
Some of them, you know, a Republican will be quick to point out, well, you know, a lot of these people have already been adjudicated. Yeah, we're not talking about that. Okay, settle down, Francis.
Right,
we're not
right.
talking about the people who have already been adjudicated, already committed a crime.
Right.
We know from their thumbprint who they are. You know, they got to go. Fine. We all agree on that, right? There's a more narrow issue of deporting people without due process. And then there's an even more narrow issue that I'd like to focus on. If I can really get granular, and I hate to focus on particular issues, you know that, you and I both do. But this idea of deporting people to a prison outside the United States.
Right.
That's not a deportation.
That's a sentencing.
That's a sentencing.
Yeah.
That's different. That's a criminal court thing. That's not a deportation thing. That may not have been as well articulated as a Yale Law School graduate, but you get my point, is that that should be handled in criminal. You should not be able to avoid criminal court when sending someone to prison. Prisons are things that we do for criminals, and we don't label people criminals until after we've gone through criminal adjudication. That's
right.
How this works. Not like I invented this, right? That's just how this works. That to me is a bigger red flag than a lot of the other dopiness. And the reason I think that that's such a big red flag is because it's not just rhetoric. For authoritarianism to take over, you've got to go all the way from a lot of people in the population are pissed to some politician has rhetoric, to some people vote for that, to he gets into power. Now you're on the other side of power, right?
Right.
And then you've got to get a lot of people in the administration to agree, notwithstanding the dopiness. And then the hard one, and this is hard as a cop, then you've got to get a lot of people to agree to actually execute on it.
Right.
That's a lot of layers. For you to make it all the way from 1 to 7 in terms of all of those layers generally takes a long time, and it didn't take all that long in this particular example that I bring up. Right. That's why it bothers me so much, because some of the other examples, right, you didn't make it all the way to execution. We still have court standing up, for example. I don't like the rhetoric. I don't like the fact that you got the Justice Department to go along with it.
Right.
So it's not like they're over at step zero either. They're over here at step four.
Right, right.
But putting people in a prison in El Salvador, that's a step seven. That's a problem.
Right. I agree with you. And because you can now officially say that he is one of your party's people, Williams says, utter nonsense. Yes, there are active judges overstepping the Constitution. In the 1960s, Lyndon Johnson sent in the National Guard to protect civil rights. Please. How do you answer William?
I didn't say anything inconsistent with that.
Right. Explain the difference of why the actions in Los Angeles are different than, say,
well, he was talking about running down the judges with your mouth. There is a difference between showing respect for the Constitution and executing on all the powers that you have underneath the Constitution. I have said many times, don't pretend like we just made this idea up. I have said many times that I would welcome a robust federal government if it would do what we as libertarians all wish it would, which is be more muscular when it comes to protecting our civil liberties.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that we want a silly, weak-ass federal government that gets cowed every time someone says, put your guns away. That's not what we're talking about. Now, admittedly, no fan of President Johnson, but there is in my view, there is a difference between a federal government that is enforcing the Constitution because it believes that locals are refusing to do so. We can all argue about the fact base,
right,
but that's not what you brought up. You brought it up as a matter of principle. I'm okay with the federal government protecting our rights and doing so with a flex when necessary. I'm not okay with the federal government saying we're not going to be held back by the Constitution because we had a lot of votes in November. That's different. As a matter of fact, it's 180 degrees opposite.
Right, right.
And you might argue, well, in effect, it's the same thing. Go ahead and have that argument all day long. It's a matter of principle. And that matters because you're a libertarian and so am I. And that's what's going to matter for the rest of eternity is how the next example plays out. Because you might like how, you know, the president has effectuated and manifested his power because of a populist recognition of how many votes he got today.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you're going to warm to whatever the next administration does, right? If that's a Green Party, Democratic Party coalition, and they figure we don't have to pay much attention to the Constitution either, we're going to send in troops for a whole other reason. We're going to send troops somewhere to protect the trees.
Right, right. And I think, you know, in Williams continuing on the private chat, that the courts have already ruled that this is not an authoritarian action. Actually, no, they haven't. The only way troops can go in again, see, someone also cited the Rodney King riots when Bush sent troops into California. That was different. Pete Wilson, the governor at the time, requested federal help. And under certain circumstances in the law, if a governor requests help, the president may in fact decide to do that. However, in this particular case, you have a governor of a state saying, we don't want federal troops here. And the only thing you could deploy federal troops to, Mike, is to protect federal property. So if you're sending the troops in to protect the courthouses, the federal courthouses where these cases allegedly are being adjudicated, or the ICE centers or whatever,
yep,
fair enough. It's an important detail, right? Oh, yeah. But sending these guys into the streets, sending Marines into the streets, is pandering. A, it's illegal, certainly without declaration of an invasion, right? And despite what Stephen Miller says, this is not an invasion. So that's the difference. So when William, if we start arguing, we won't be here all night. But that's the difference. That's the libertarian. That's why we say you got to show your work as libertarians or as liberty-minded people. We have to show our work. We have to say, why is it that you agree with Selma? Why is it that you, agree with Kennedy going in against Wallace or whatever? If you, in fact, agree with that, many libertarians still wouldn't agree with that action, as opposed to what's happening now. But okay, let's wrap this up a little bit.
The argument comes down to the facts of the case. And that's why we all need to be careful about arguing the particular facts of a particular case, because that's what courts are for.
Right.
You know, it's very difficult to adjudicate in 15 minutes of a podcast what all the facts of a case are.
Right.
But as a matter of principle, we do need to recognize that there have to be checks on the executive branch and the other branches, and that the courts have a legitimate role to play in doing that.
All right. And then the final question, and I think it's the perfect one to end the show on. Hey, handsome, will you continue on with Liberty Lens, or are you getting the boot? What's-his-name-with-the-glasses.
That's up to what's-his-name. I will go on record as saying that I will continue doing Liberty Lens until he's sick of me, but I do not know with any certainty whether that'll be next Wednesday or 2048.
No, Mike, listen. Much like anybody that I've always said, if I expect people to go against their party leaders on principle, like, you know, a lot of people don't like Justin Amash. I love Justin Amash for the fact when he felt that his principles were not aligned with his party, he left the party. So to the extent that I view you as someone who believes in liberty, you're always welcome on Liberty Lens. So, Linda, to your question, Liberty Lens will continue so long as Mike does not tell me that he supports a third term for President Trump. As long as that Rubicon is not crossed, we're in good shape. All right, Mike, thank you so much. I know it's been a long day for you. You've been hitting the talk show and podcast circuit. I'm pretty sure you will be all week. But I do look forward for our Liberty Lens episode this week, as a matter of fact. And we'll have something out about the LA riots, in fact. So everyone out there who's watching, thank you so much. Mike, any last words or anything you want to promote?
You
promote the RLC.
It's been a lot of fun. It'll continue to be a lot of fun. And I think that that's a good metaphor for what it is we're trying to do inside the Republican Party. We're going to continue fighting in the same way that we always have. And again, I'm not sure this would be the right strategy for everybody.
Right.
But I think someone has to try it, and nobody more logical than me and this team. And by the way, it needs to be said, we haven't spent much time talking about this, but the team that we have put together, the team that has bought into this idea, is absolutely terrific. There are individuals of whom you should be so proud, even if you don't like this move, the fact that they are risking so much important relationships, putting themselves out there and getting called horrific names, right?
Right.
You've got to hand it to these folks for putting up with it. You know, people like Michael Smith in Florida, who chaired the advisory committee for my presidential campaign and built up the Libertarian Party of Broward to be what I believe was the biggest, baddest-assed libertarian county group in America. Irene Mavrikakis, who I think a lot of you know, who is an amazingly liberty-minded physician, skeptical of all of the old dopey ways that medical policy was put together, spreading the idea of the importance of medical freedom and building strong bridges with the Maha people. Just an amazing coalition builder. We've got David Moskrip, who was a hugely important activist in Indiana, came to Florida, built up the Libertarian Party of Hillsborough County,
right. Is
homecoming to the Republican Party. That's a big deal. and we're extremely excited to have someone with David's organizational skills on this team. And, you know, a lot of people will remember Corey Faulkner, who was the communications director of the LP of Virginia, who knows all kinds of independents, libertarians, and Republicans around the Commonwealth of Virginia, who is launching the Republican Liberty Caucus of Virginia from brand new. We've already voted him to be the chairman of our group on an informal basis, which just means everyone around the dining room table said we wanted Corey. I promise my feelings weren't that hurt. It was pretty clear that they wanted Corey, but he's absolutely terrific. To have people like this on the team is quite humbling. They're asking of each other. They're asking of me. I'm asking of them to do things that aren't necessarily comfortable, that aren't necessarily easy. These are folks that are doing things for others. They are doing things out of a sense of service because they recognize that we have problems in this country and they want to make a contribution to fixing those problems.
Yeah, and you're right. We didn't mention it, but I think there's something like 40 or 41, 42 people that were part of your announcement today.
Yeah.
Certainly, we don't want to shortchange anyone, even some of the folks that you may not have mentioned right now. So this is a big move. And listen, Mike, my friend, all the best luck in achieving. Like, I am saddened that you're not officially part of the LP, but I'm still happy that you're part of the Liberty Movement because I consider this part of the Liberty Movement. And to the extent that, you know, we want to see you succeed, I want to see you succeed because if you succeed, Liberty succeeds, and that's just the way I view it. So thank you for joining tonight. Please plug a website, plug your handle on X.
Thank you. The website is MikeTremont.com. On X, we're Mike Tremont with an underscore because there are four other Mike Tremonts around the United States that keep doing things like, you know, taking the website that I want or taking the X handle that I want.
There's a lot of Flying Dutchmen running around calling themselves Mike Tremont.
A whole bunch of them. A couple of them I've seen online. They look terrific. I don't know them. I haven't met them. One is some kid in a suburb of Amsterdam who seems terrific, but you know, what do I know?
Right.
So reach out to me direct. Anybody wants to talk about the RLC, Mike@MikeTremont.com. Obviously if anyone wants to join the RLC, we are in heavy recruiting mode over the next year. We would love to have you.
All right. And, don't forget everyone. Right here at Grumblings Media. Every Thursday, Liberty Lens will continue to drop with Big John and Mike. We'll still dive in on one issue every week of interest to Liberty lovers. And for everybody else, please continue to join us right here every Thursday night at our regular time, 10 p.m. Eastern, for Free for All and all the other great shows right here at the grumblingsmedia.com platform. Until next week, until we talk again, actually, until this Thursday night. Peace, everyone.